Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Oh, my, what a panel we have today. It's Monday, the 20th of August, and hopefully you've been having a lovely, lovely weekend. I don't know. Your weekend may have varied, but hopefully you had a lovely weekend. Let me introduce everybody to you, and we'll get started here for what the next 90 minutes will bring. Libby Post is with us. She is a communications consultant. I spent all weekend looking at pictures of your puppy on Facebook.
Oh.
Very cute.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm awake.
Is the baby sleeping?
She's doing good. We're crate training. We bought two crates. We're good to go. She's almost
Excellent. Half broken.
God help us. And there you go.
And there you go. Rosemary Armeo is here. We are so excited. She'll be with us, I believe, up until Thursday, right? You're here?
Yeah, through Wednesday, right?
Through Wednesday. You're not here Thursday.
I leave Wednesday night.
Okay. So we're very happy to have you with
Thank
us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo here. And you had a good weekend? You were...
Yes, visiting with Mom. And then I went to a peace conference up in Fonda, New York.
How was that, Rosemary?
It was not what I expected. Expected, Alan.
Anything but peaceful?
Not as peaceful as you would have expected.
I had to force pacifying thoughts in my head. These are people who have gone to prison to stand up and protest against government action. I admire that very much, like a CIA analyst who quit over our torture policies, and people have gone to jail over Trident missile and the weapon. But they don't like the press very much. They see us as part of the enemy, and an enemy of the people. I felt like an enemy of the people.
That's not right.
But I have to say, the picture of your mom sitting on the Hudson River dining was beautiful.
Wow, I've lived here all my life and don't know, like, Yanni too, right on the Hudson
yeah,
River.
Isn't it great?
I want to live there.
It's nice, and the food's pretty good.
It was really. I had raw oysters, man. I'm in heaven.
From the Hudson, raw oysters.
Yeah, I hope they were.
we hope.
A special line. They come from GE.
And our Lower Hudson Valley correspondent is here as well. Barry Lewis joins us. He's the executive editor of the Times Herald Record in Middletown. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Joe. How are you doing?
Well, wonderful to have you here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the
baked goods.
Yes, the
no. Thank you for the baked goods. What are you doing? What
yes,
do
it's
you
that,
do that?
It's
Why
that,
do you bring that stuff?
It's the Catskill tradition of summer rugelach, but will soon as the leaves start to turn, so will the hamlets and the main streets become empty as our summer visitors depart. And unfortunately take with them all their baked goods.
Take the rugelach with them.
Sons of a gun.
I have tomatoes, by the way, in the car for anybody who needs tomatoes.
That sounds too healthy.
Yeah. I know.
Ooh, a rugelach and tomato sandwich.
Rugelach and tomato sandwich. There you go.
Lovely. Sarah Rogerson is here as well. She directs the Immigration Law Clinic and is a Albany Law School professor. And we thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Great pleasure to have you on the program. Alan Chartok is here right across from me. Good morning.
What do you want to know?
I want to know, how was everything? Do you have any comments on what you've heard so far?
Not that good.
Not that good.
My back was bad, so I went to my wonderful Matt Olheim at, Rupture Associates, and he worked on me for a while. He said, turn over on your left side. I turned over my left side, and one of my hearing aids disappeared.
Oh.
So I spent the all day Friday looking for my hearing aids everywhere. I had the staff fully engaged. Everybody was looking for this.
Did you find it?
Well, at the middle of the night, I wrote him a note, and he went over on Saturday morning, and he said, sure enough, thank God that the vacuum cleaner didn't come by, because there it was, and now I have it.
Good for you.
So you don't have a backup pair? It's called, like, glasses?
You know what these things cost?
Yeah, they're really very expensive.
These are $6,000.
Oh, kind of like having a backup Maserati.
Yeah.
You know, it's a...
I would just want the car.
And then you can't hear the police.
Yeah, come after you.
We want him to hear. That's good.
What did you say?
What'd you say?
All right, that's what you do anyway. All right, everybody, here we go. We'll begin with the news and a lot of investigation and intrigue and all kinds of interesting things going on today. So we'll make our way through the headlines and find out where we end up. Michael Cohen, remember Michael Cohen?
Oh, yeah, the taxi cab.
Yeah, so that business apparently has caused him some issues or a lot of money, however you look at it. Federal authorities investigating whether President Trump's former personal lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen committed bank and tax fraud have zeroed in on well over $20 million in loans obtained by taxi businesses that he and his family own, according to people familiar with the matter. Investigators are also examining whether Mr. Cohen violated campaign finance or other laws by helping to arrange financial deals to secure the silence of women who said they had affairs with Mr. Trump. The inquiry has entered the final stage, and prosecutors are considering filing charges by the end of August. That's next week.
I heard today. Said. I heard this afternoon.
Today, yeah. So there you go. And all I can get, I can't get out of my mind, all I can think of is just when the whole Stormy Daniel thing started to go and Michael Cohen was going to court for the first time. I remember just really smug wearing the jacket, no tie, with the cigars out on the well, that's very different now.
Well, you know, Joe, I've been thinking about not only that, but I've been thinking about Manafort. Because, you know, that jury is out there right now.
They did not reach a verdict by the weekend, which many people said was concerning.
They asked for what the definition, that bad judge, they asked them about the definition of you know,
reasonable doubt.
That wasn't good. So if he gets off, you know, there would, I think that would slow things down considerably. You know,
experts say that's a common question from jurors. It's an extremely complicated case. I'm not worried yet. It goes two more days, then I'm going to worry.
And that's the difference between you and me.
Well, but
I think there's a little more than that.
To quote a Shartok, it only takes one, right?
Yeah, that's right. Takes one.
There's another trial already set for him. This is not the one bite at the apple that you have.
Well, let's hear from Sarah, who is, of course, our lawyer. Professor lawyer, and who knows about these things.
A professor lawyer.
Oh, man. So now I'm going to opine on the Fourth Amendment. Please. And reasonableness. Actually, reasonableness comes up a lot in all of today's stories.
Yes.
And then you have Rudy Giuliani saying the truth is not the truth.
Not saying, but brain.
Right.
Brain.
So I wouldn't fault any jury for saying, wait a minute, what is all of this?
Yeah.
You know, give us an anchor to go by. You know, what is the truth? So that's probably just what's going on here.
Yeah, but did they find? Yeah, that's nice. But did they find him guilty or not, Sarah? That's why you're on the panel.
So let me ask another question.
You can't predict what a jury does.
Right, you can't predict what a jury does. However, with that said, given the preponderance of evidence, given the strong case that seemed to have been made, It would be something if he got off on all charges, wouldn't it?
It would be something. It would be very disorienting, I think, to the American public to say, well, and, you know, what little hope we've had in these investigations. I think it would be fairly crushing to say, well, how much is it going to take? It's the same question that we're asking of the president. Yeah. There are three different layers of lawyers now around the president. There are lawyers for his lawyers and lawyers for those lawyers. Mm-hmm. And how many layers of lawyers do we need to cut through in order to find the truth and hold people accountable?
Well, here's my problem. I'm sitting there. I you know, slave over our income taxes. I bring it to the right person. Mm-hmm. I said, my name is Alan Shattuck. They're out to get me. You know, if I do anything...
He says that to his pharmacist, too, but that's another story.
If I do anything wrong, you know, I'm done. And here's this guy with millions and millions and millions of dollars. Right. The American people are being told that he didn't pay taxes on all of that stuff. And still, you know what? Reasonable doubt?
Yeah. And Cohen, too. Same thing.
Well, I think the idea also is what was his attorneys looking to get out of all this? And the fact that they didn't present their own witnesses and not much of a case, the question is, are they looking simply for a hung jury? Are they just looking for not necessarily an acquittal, but just some?
Not looking for a win.
But they'll take a tie. They'll take something out of it, and then where we see Cohen and where we see Omarosa flipping down the road, maybe they look for the play the Trump card, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And get the pardon.
So, Sarah, I am interested in what Barry was just saying about that whole strategy. I mean, a lot has been talked about the defense strategy of just saying, okay, you've heard what you've heard, and now we'll pass and just do our closing statement.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think that there's potentially a lot of risk involved there. But that also speaks to, we don't know what the lawyers know. Right.
Right.
And strategy is usually a product of hours of conversations, consultants being brought in, and, you know, the honest moments that you have with your client at 11 o'clock at night behind closed doors to say, how bad is it really? So it's...
And his lawyers know it's his lawyers know it's bad. I mean, they've seen the paperwork. They know he hasn't... It's not a question of if he can afford or not afford the stuff that he got. It's, did he pay taxes on any of this stuff? What was he trying to hide? What was the, you know, what deals was he making? And they're aware of that as well.
Sarah, respectfully, I know you lawyers. I know what you do all the time.
But what about professor lawyers? When
they say, am I in trouble? Of course the lawyer is going to look at them and say, very bad trouble, because that put some, you know, some what window between them and responsibility.
Well, by reasonable doubt, for anyone who has, I think, followed the paperwork in this case, can say he seems like he's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, well, a good lawyer, will lay out the options, right? They'll say, here are the pros and cons of proceeding along any of these possible routes. Here's your risk exposure, and you make your own decision about what you're going to do with that. I think we've seen Trump completely ignore that advice. I don't know if Manafort's in the same. Well, he's not. He doesn't have the same sort of look.
You know, Sarah and Rosemary, I know you're going to check in on this,
stand up, Rosemary.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, there you go.
But the one thing that we do know. Is that I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah. No, but the one thing that we really know is that they have another trial coming up, and that of course is a very difficult situation.
It'd still be a blow if this case is lost. That's a blow against Mueller. Yeah. There's no way around that, and that's why that judge's behavior was so troubling. Even though I do think he was just a hard judge and would have given a hard time had there been a defense.
So
are you going to interrupt me?
No, I'm not.
Are you surprised that they weren't sequestered? That seems to be, I thought, an interesting aspect of this case, given
all
the publicity.
And that's what I was going to ask both you and Sarah about that very thing. About you have a jury that's out this weekend that is home, mm-hmm. where the president is tweeting that Manafort is a very good person and that the trial was very, very sad.
McCarthyism.
I actually think jurors are pretty dutiful and they're not looking at that. They may hear some things, but they're not paying attention. They actually are kind of out of it. When I cover trials, they would go, no, I never read anything about that. Oh, President who? So, no, I'm not worried about that. What I am worried about is that, why did it take Mueller to put this? Manafort just violated so many white-collar crime laws. Why did it take Mueller? And I'll say the same thing about Michael Cohen. That guy was boldly go $20 million in question. Why did it take the Trump investigation to bring this? I want the FBI to spend a little time. I don't like the FBI either. I don't like making them the heroes in any of these stories. But why aren't they spending more time on white-collar crime? That's a lot of money.
It is.
I'm as a taxpayer, I'm highly annoyed by this.
Yeah, my husband owns his own practice, so we were audited last year for a decimal, you know, potentially being out of place, and we had to submit all of our paperwork. It was fine, but I had to go to
tax court because I was accused of taking $3,000 from the, I don't know, I work overseas, so they, you know, I'm immediately charged. I had to go to tax court. It cost me thousands of dollars.
Well, at least you're not bitter about it.
I am very bitter. Very.
Did anyone find it ironic? I thought this idea of that Cohen misrepresented the value of his assets, and I thought, gee, did he not learn well from his old boss, Trump? You know, the whole question of what is Trump worth and the value of his assets, and that in fact there is no value to any of his assets and no value to anything in which not only does he say, but that he touches. And here's Cohen being questioned on what were the value of these medallions. And it just, that seeps of just that swampy.
And it all follows through.
It's amazing.
And his associate has already been disbarred.
Yeah.
And is in terrible trouble. The real taxi king, you know, of New York. And, you know, we're having, and I have been getting a certain amount of criticism for this. We're hearing from taxi drivers. Six taxi drivers have supposedly killed themselves now because the medallions.
Well, because of Uber and everything, these medallions that were truly. I mean,
they were $1 million medallions.
Yeah. Now.
Yeah, and it's all very interesting because now we see that industry doing its best to make sure that Uber doesn't exist, and a lot of politicians going along with that. But on the other hand, there were just a few people. Forget about the individual, the poor guys who really did own their own taxi cabs after having worked for it for years and years. But you know, you had them. You had these guys like Cohen, and I'm going to ask Rosemary to respond to this one, who has been regularly called. And I'm fascinated that the papers from day one have fixed this up. Not only his lawyer, but his quote fixer, which I think has a very negative connotation to it. And yet,
why would you need a fixer?
Because you're sleeping with women, not your wife.
You break things, right? It's kind of like, why do you worry about having to testify that you may perjure yourself unless you cannot help but tell a lie.
But why
the word fixer from day one in all of the newspapers?
Well, I think, but that was a term. And
he used it himself. Yeah, he said it proudly, like, yes. I'm close to him. He's got a problem. I fix it.
And you have to put something on your tax return when you put down what is your occupation.
Yeah, right.
And obviously, he couldn't put down medallion owner, and he obviously couldn't put down lawyer because we're not sure, and he could put down real estate magnate. So fixer just seemed like the one that the IRS said, yeah, that seems legit.
You know, and it seems so obvious to us. I love being in this group because it's like, yeah, I'm not crazy. But you go out into the rest of the world and they all think we liberals are attacking Trump, mm-hmm. who he stands for the little people. And we're just like nitpicking things on Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen. How bad of us.
And you wonder, when are they going to realize?
I do, and I don't think they aren't.
I don't think
they ever will.
I had an interview with Sean Spicer last week, and that was one of the questions I asked. He's like, well, what if we're... Oh, get a grip. But one of the questions I asked is, what if it is bad? Like, what if it is that bad? And everything that we're doing and we're saying is right. Then how does the system protect it?
And he said, biggest crowd ever at inauguration.
Well, but this, period. You know, all of this goes back to the people who didn't like
He said fair point. Yeah. But
all this goes back to the people who didn't like the media in your... At your peace conference. It's because...
30
you know,
seconds. Go ahead.
What?
30 seconds. Go ahead.
It's about corporate interests taking over democracy. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what's happened here. And that's why white-collar crime isn't being gone after like it used to be, because corporate interests run the Justice Department. Mm-hmm. Look at the role money plays in politics. And you have people on the left saying the media is bad, mimicking Trump, because they don't like the corporate takeover of the media.
Good
Libby Post is here, Rosemary Armero, Barry Lewis, Sarah Rogerson, and Alan Chartok.
I hear
we will
you.
Continue our conversation right after this. We have spent much of the time talking about Michael Cohen and juries and all that. We'll go to the letters here, and then we'll talk about, we still have Don McGahn to talk about. We still have Rudy Giuliani, Truth Isn't Truth. Yes.
And priests. I want to talk about priests.
And we also want to talk about the Sex Abuse Church report as well as many other things. So let's go to the letters and we'll get through the list here.
Thank you, Joe.
Pete writes, we love Rosemary.
Oh, wow.
... And then he thought better of that and said, and the rest of the panel.
And the rest of the staff.
This is okay, because your families all love you. I don't get this kind of welcome from my family, my relatives.
Your mother's not happy to see
me. My mother's happy to see me.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Take that.
Okay, and the rest of the panel on any given day. Does Manafort have to be convicted on all aspects to be found guilty? Of course not.
No.
There are 18 separate charges.
18 separate charges.
Any one of
so
those charges.
Reasonable doubt could have been for one of 18.
Yeah,
you
could
never
have been.
Know.
Could have been. But I'm a Murphyist, mm-hmm. and I saw it differently.
And a Peter Principalist.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and then
that's
next true. Week you'll be saying if he gets off. I predicted he was going to get off.
Rosemary.
And we'll hear about that for the next year.
Rosemary, dear, you are so right. And I only have one. I, have only
I
one,
know your methods.
Don't you miss her?
And I have only one thing to say, Fire Island. Okay. And Eve says, Manafort, hello, you all. Now that the IRS knows about the overseas dough, won't they go after Manafort? And that's from Eve in Rexford.
One can only hope.
Well, but
the IRS works for Donald Trump, so who knows?
Well, that's hard to know.
Yeah. I mean, that's where all of this is. You know, all of these agencies, they're executive agencies. You know, the FBI is sort of on its own with the CIA and the intelligence community, but the IRS is his person is at the head of it, so who knows?
You know, we've had people on the panel who have suggested that there is a tremendous amount of resistance from those people who work in the government.
There is.
Right. And who really, look, take a look at the Southern District of New York,
right,
who is now trying Manafort.
Yeah.
This guy sat in the White House and was interviewed after Trump fired Preet, was interviewed by Preet. And now here he is doing this work and saying no person is above the law. It's amazing, isn't it?
We can only hope that there are other people of these appointees that value democracy and country over cronyism and politics.
Yeah. Well, and you're seeing it with the intelligence community where you have 170 plus have now said. In fact, people wanting to wear that take away my privileges as a badge of honor, saying I want to be in that group. It's almost like wanting to be on the on Nixon's list. It was if you were on the list,
right.
You
know,
okay.
it said something about you.
Right. I liked this group a little bit better. Comey, Clapper, Brennan, blah. They were pro-torture. They lied about NSA. These are not admirable people. I don't like having to admire them just because they're on the right side of the deal with Trump.
Well, I think you make a point. Don McGahn. McGahn. What's his first name?
Don. Yeah, you're right.
Don McGahn is very interesting. He thought they were trying to set him up.
Yeah.
And so. I know we're going to get to that, but he thought that they were trying to set him up. And he went ahead and he spent 30 hours, 10 hours each, three days, 10 hours. Now, you have a battery of lawyers sitting across from you and asking you these questions. That's a lot of questions. And Rudy, of course, is braying and saying that, we have ultimate confidence in him. But they were saying the same thing about Manafort. They're saying the same thing about Cohen. What are their choices?
And McGahn made it clear, I think, in one of the articles, it said that he's there to protect, as counsel, to protect the presidency, not the president.
Yeah, we've all heard that a number
McCann
of times.
Is, right, and McCann is, at this point, looking to protect himself. I mean, he is, if of many things, he is not a stupid individual. And he knows he has to make sure that Mueller's team realizes whatever he did had nothing to do with protecting the president.
Well, I like the Times headline on the story that said Trump's lawyer's sudden realization they don't know what Don McGahn told Mueller's team.
And so truth isn't the truth.
Looks like a kid, doesn't he? You see the pictures on him?
Yeah,
it doesn't look like a
Hey, we're not supposed to talk about appearances, because if you do, I'm bringing up Sarah Huckabee.
Oh, gosh.
What? Say that again?
We can't talk about appearances, because if you do, I want to talk about Sarah.
What were you
smoky eye makeup and all that.
Well, it's a good thing you do it, because, if a man did that, there would be...
He was just talking about Don McCann looking like a young kid.
Yeah, but no. He was talking about...
You started it.
Anybody want to talk about Giuliani? Just kidding.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. It's like,
he used to be such a serious person. I remember admiring him as a prosecutor. Now it's like he's forgotten everything about prosecution. It's weird.
Okay.
Letters, and then we'll move through most of
Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Won't the IRS go after Manafort? And Megan says, Manafort, good morning, panel. Do you think one of the jurors could be compromised? I think there must be very power unscrupulous people who want to ensure Manafort is not found guilty. How hard would it be to buy a juror? Megan Brown.
Perhaps a conspiracy theory, but...
It's happened.
And I think the judge in the trial was facing death threats, right? And had to be placed under the U.S. Marshals protection. So what's to say the jurors aren't under a similar constraint? And we'll see.
How do I get a marshal when somebody writes me a death threat or a near death threat? I don't get that.
It was just me. You just call me and say, stop.
I love you. So Kathy says, Manafort trial, the jury has to consider 18 separate counts. Yeah, if they spent an hour on each charge, that would require 18 hours of deliberation. We want the jurors to do their jobs well. I don't think we should worry about their verdicts. It is possible they will not convict on one or more charges, but the evidence was overwhelming, and I believe we can be confident that they will return guilty verdicts on many charges in their own good time, and that's Kathy from Saugerties.
All right.
All right.
Next up.
And thank you. You're pushing me along, right?
I just have 3 minutes.
Okay,
I'm
sorry.
I think we can get
Keith
through
all of them. Keith says, what's worse? Good morning, panel. Welcome back, Rosemary. It's great to hear your voice on WAMC. What's worse, the TSA or the IRS?
TSA.
Okay. For those of you who are just joining us.
Include that custom stuff. Are we doing that?
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
Elizabeth, I don't know. They both shake you down. I don't know.
Elizabeth says, white collar crime. I believe the attacks on the IRS over the past 10 plus years is why white collar criminals are getting away with it. The budget for the IRS has been decimated, so people do not believe they will be audited, so they are willing to take greater risks. Those who have seen any audits, perhaps, have been vocal in their criticism of the current White House occupant. You know, I was just going to say before that I.F. Stone, is he Stone? He was audited constantly. Constantly. It was a way of getting to him.
Well, you have to wonder who's in charge of budget, which is the White House and Congress. Who does the cutting? Mostly the Republicans. So they cut the IRS so people won't be able to, so they won't be able to audit some of their friends and family.
Well, yeah, maybe, but also, the other side is also true that there are many people who you would suspect are getting audited because of political reasons. And so, Mike on Cape Cod, an old cake, overwhelming the jury. I'm wondering about the wisdom of charging Manafort with 18 felonies. Isn't this likely this could overwhelm and confuse the jury? Wouldn't it make more sense to charge him with just a few of these more straightforward crimes? If he is found not guilty, he could then be charged with some of the other crimes. Well, that's been done before. Yeah. Right, Sarah?
Yeah, well, that would be a tricky strategy. I think it's best to put it all on the table and then give the jurors something to hang their hat on, so to speak.
Right. And also, it is possible that on some of them, they will not be as one. So, in other words, you could retry them on the ones that the jury found, you know, couldn't agree on.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. Comment, says Jerry from Gilderland. It's interesting that Rudy said there's no such thing as truth. Boy, did he make headlines this weekend. Who do you believe, he asked, so that Manafort jurors read this and might cause them to doubt anything said, resulting in a not guilty verdict? Part of the Trump agenda. That's Jerry from Gilderland.
Is there anyone on the planet who believes anything that Rudy says? I mean, at this point in time, we've gone beyond the boy who cries wolf. So it's almost foolish. It's sort of when you were having Kellyanne, right? They said, well, why are we bringing her on our shows when we know she's lying? At some point, you have to. Now, I understand he's the president's lawyer, but there is absolutely nothing he says that you're going to buy.
Why do you keep
bringing him on?
Hey, 40% of the Republicans will not. 70% of. I'm sorry.
Of the Republicans,
right. I think it's 90%,
right.
Will believe every word that either the president or the lawyer says.
I don't know if even they give that to Giuliani. I think that in many times when I speak to readers who are upset with coverage, when you talk to them, there is so much of Trump that they do not like, and they will admit. But then, and in the essence, the foundation is yes, but we still believe either in his economics or stuff. I think that the Trump, and this is where I think the Republicans are going to be in trouble. I think the Trump control works for Trump and only Trump, and it's a small base. And I think his tentacles outside of Trump, be it Giuliani, be it other Republicans, is just not as strong. I don't think people believe Giuliani, but they have whatever reason, some faith in Trump.
Remember, this is New York State.
And it's a force of personality. I mean, when people say, oh, don't impeach Trump, we'll get Pence, he's worse, and which is true. But Pence doesn't have the force of personality as that Trump does. So Pence would never get elected. I don't think he'd ever get elected
president. We said that about Trump.
Yeah, I know.
And Giuliani doesn't have it. And Giuliani tried to be president as well, too. And you know, that's why it doesn't work unless it's Trump. And it's everything from The Apprentice and his history and everything that packs into it. And I think others have tried, and we've seen some New York politicians. They try to be Trump, And they're not Trump because they don't have the whatever gravitas he had coming
what
into this.
What word were you
this.
Going for, Barry? Go
yeah.
ahead.
I don't know. I want to believe that. I find that interesting. But the people who have lost trying to do that are so execrable. I mean, look at Roy Moore.
Yeah. Of Alabama.
Who lost, but by the tiniest of margins. And he was like the worst person imaginable to run for office.
That's correct.
So I do think that some of the Trump charisma rubs off.
But he was also in one of the most big conservative areas. So it was going to be hard for...
I would also argue that with Roy Moore, Joe Arpaio, those are people who had very large personalities
yes,
prior going into this.
They
were very Trumpian in nature, mm-hmm. too.
Okay, I have to keep thinking of
you know, look
example.
At Chris Collins.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, but the people who are trying to ride on the coattails as opposed to having their own cult following, as it were.
I mean, I think we're going to see in the midterm how many of Republicans who have not spoken up against anything Trump has said. How many? We know the ones who are retiring, so they're the ones who actually have had the only profile and courage moments. But for all the others,
for all these others.
How are they going to survive, and are they going to survive? The ones who had an opportunity to say something and didn't.
Martha Roby in Georgia. She lost her primary because she was mean to Trump and said he wanted to grab women's genitals, and so therefore I can't support him, and she was punished. He does have clout. I don't know if it's strong enough, but he does have clout that pushes others along.
And that was a woman, too. And again, we know how that plays into that Trump base.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Women don't survive in the Trump base.
Yeah.
What's,
no,
they
don't survive. But in the midterms, it's going to be the suburban moms and the suburban women who are going to define what happens
if they come out and vote.
Yes.
If they come out and vote, and that's going to be.
I think that they are.
It's very troubling.
I know.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation right after this. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson. We have Barry Lewis, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post, who's shaking your head, and I don't really know why.
Oh, okay.
I see. All right.
Rosemary, I love your T-shirt. That is great.
It's the...
My WAMC First Amendment T-shirt, the 45 words of the most important political document in our history.
Hey, Joe, do you sell those? Can we get these?
Yeah.
I'm not looking for a discount, mind you.
I don't know if we... I think we still have some.
Well, maybe if there's like a 10% discount.
I had to give
a
$100 donation.
Bobby, who I used to work with.
It was 110. Now it's just 100 for you.
Pay 100 in gas to get here.
All right. Alan's got a letter.
Yes. And I love this John Dean being the rat. Wasn't that a great?
It was
that was such a giveaway for the president that John Dean, who testified truthfully and brought Nixon down, was regarded by the president of the United States as a rat.
Well, you know, that guy tells it like it is. John Dean was a rat. He did. That was true.
He
turned on the president. He did. He turned on Nixon. I'm glad he did. But
that sounds like a negative. I mean, that's a negative connotation.
Yeah, well, he
was when he was to protect the presidency. Not the president.
Well, he would have protected the presidency, Libby, by not participating in the cover-up before that. He then came clean.
Well, Rosemary, as loath as I am to take on your many fans and, the people who truly love you, I want to disagree with you, about this. He was not a rat. He was testifying, and he was testifying truthfully about what had happened, and he did this government and this country a great service. So for this—
I agree with that.
So for this president— To call him a rat is really something. Now, I am somewhat vulnerable here because anybody who listens to my commentary ever at 7:45 knows that on several occasions I have talked about whether or not Mueller will be fired. And I always say, well, when you put a rat in a corner, they will bite. They have to because that's the way it is. And so when it comes to calling people a rat— I didn't exactly call him a rat, and I've been very careful to say I'm not exactly calling him a rat, but this business about rat is a tough word.
Who's the rat? Mueller, Trump? I'm a little confused. And
well,
there is
the
a
rat?
Common expression to rat somebody out, which is to tell on your friends. So I think, I have many complaints against Trump, but calling John Dean a rat is not one of them.
Well, we certainly disagree on that.
I'm shocked.
Okay. We're done on Mr. Giuliani saying truth is truth. Yeah. No, it isn't truth. Truth isn't truth. Chuck Todd, who I don't know. I don't like him. I'm a big fan.
I thought Chuck was going to have an aneurysm on national television.
But this is to your earlier point, Barry. Then why have him on? You know what you're going to have.
Exactly.
You know what you're going to get.
Right.
Good ratings.
Thank you. That's what it was. It's good ratings. You don't know what Giuliani is going to say, and so you get. So you got this. So now everyone is replaying Chuck Todd. They're all playing replaying Chuck Todd's interview with him over and over.
Yeah. Why are we wrong?
A, I love Chuck Todd. B, unlike the rest of you critical carpers, CCC, critical carpers. I think he's great. And number two, he's the president's lawyer. You know what? You bring him on, and he defends the president, and he says the worst kinds of things, like there is no such thing as truth, and you hold him responsible for it. He's the laughing stock of the nation.
Yes, I agree with
you. It was a good get, as they say in radio.
Yes, no, I think he should go on. You know, yes, nobody's going to believe him, but it's one more
nail in the coffin
example of how morally bankrupt this administration is.
Then Chuck, and maybe it reached the point where even Chuck, who thought he would hear just about anything out of Giuliani's mouth, hears that, and you see him grabbing he grabs his forehead and he's trying to squeeze it so that his corpuscles pop or something. Going, I can't believe
it's a little dramatic.
It's the Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right. If he kicked off Giuliani, if he didn't let Kellyanne come on, another big liar, then we'd be the liberal press would be accused of censoring, of saying, Trump.
No, that's true.
Can't get his story.
Chuck's response was great. There's going to be a meme out of this, and he's absolutely right. it'll live forever on social media.
I remember years and years ago, I was interviewing this woman as a student. I was interviewing Larry King. And when Larry King did Larry King Live on CNN, and he said, every night you have a show, and some nights you just need, you want a little crazy. And he said, and I say to the bookers, hey, get Zsa Zsa. And you just have a little crazy. And I think that was what it was. Yeah. Every once in a while, you just need a little crazy.
That's great.
Well, you also
the president's lawyer. For God's sakes, he's the president's lawyer.
And you know you're going to get eyes on the tube.
Yeah, because you can't look away.
Right.
Well, that's true.
People are going to watch.
Well, not only that, and I'm not a reporter, but isn't that your dream to be able to get that interview where the person says the thing that people talk about for the next 14 days? It's not.
And they said, and Chuck Todd did a head plant or a hand plant or whatever they call it when he went, wait,
and
I can't believe he said that.
And it is comparable to the question that the media, and more importantly, obviously, the television media, as to, why do you continue to cover Trump's speeches? And to, I guess, answer Alan, it's because he's the president.
Right.
And when he does these speeches and he does these rallies, you cover them because what he says is news. Obviously, the question could have been, why did CNN give him carte blanche coverage before he was president? And that's a legitimate one when no one else did. And that was for ratings.
We used to say if there were 200 people at a meeting, you had a news story. Because that meant that many people were interested. And Trump got thousands, and that was news. And I don't get the whole thing about you covered him too much, that's why he got elected. How about we covered him so much he didn't get elected because people saw how truly nuts and extreme he was? Well, how come it's all on the media?
They gave him the platform, they gave him the forum that none of the other candidates got, and he ate it up, and they also knew. Look, they knew that the ratings were there. And when he said, I should charge CNN for these debates— He could have, because those debates were there.
They didn't give Hillary that much time.
No, they didn't give Bernie that.
And they didn't give the other Republicans who were on the 16 dwarfs, whatever they were. They didn't get that much time either. And so
that was the slate of Republican national presidential
Yes, I know.
Candidates.
It's true. I know.
And you can't say that anymore.
Poor Giuliani.
What,
poor,
that they're dwarfs? Or 16 dwarfs?
Seven dwarfs.
Right. I remember when Cuomo was running, you may remember, and they told
him. Which one?
They said he was dwarf tossing because he was insisting that the other candidates be on the stage. Yeah.
Remember when the Republican didn't show up to the debate and they had the paper cut out?
Yeah, sure. That's an old one.
So was it insulting when we say that George Pataki couldn't eat, wasn't able to be at the big boys table, the adults table?
Yeah.
He couldn't even make that level.
Right. Well, I mean, 9/11, that was, it was clear that Pataki was holding Giuliani's coat.
That's Andrew Cuomo.
That's the thing.
Andrew Cuomo said that.
Right. 9/11 made Rudy Giuliani mayor of the United States in a very real way. And he has just totally, you know, thrown out whatever goodwill he had had from that.
Although they still call him mayor when they're interviewing him.
Because that was his last,
title. Right, they call Hillary Clinton Secretary Clinton.
But people forget, September 10th, he was not a very popular man in New York City. And you're right. I don't know what financially or what he gets out of this, but it's interesting to have. I would love to ask, and certainly not in this time.
He gets ego.
But you kind of wonder at this point in time, you know, he had a legacy which was going to be that, you know, what was going to be all bitch. He was going to be America's mayor, and he had a legacy. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, and maybe it's ego because this is the closest he's ever going to get to being in the White House, is you would love to ask him,
why?
Why did you throw it all away? Yeah. It wasn't for money. It was it all for the attention?
He just squandered it all.
And he
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have many more topics to discuss. We have a panel ready to do so, and we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Roseberry Armeo, Sarah Rogerson, Libby Post, and Barry Lewis making up the panel this morning. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Pope Francis issued a rare letter to Catholics around the world today condemning the atrocities of priestly sexual abuse and its cover-up, demanding greater accountability and asking his flock to, quote, join forces in uprooting this culture of death. The Pope said that the Church would spare no effort to ensure that such situations never happened again, but he acknowledged that much damage has already been done and that the Church has fallen short of its responsibilities to children and to the faithful. A Vatican spokesperson said it may have been the first time a pope has addressed the world's 1.2 billion Catholics about sexual abuse. All of this, of course, comes as the Pope is getting ready to go to Ireland, where the abuse issue has dominated the headlines ahead of his visit, and just days after a searing grand jury report in the state of Pennsylvania found that the Church has covered up the abuse of more than 1,000 minors by some 300 priests over a period of 70 years.
So the question is it enough? You know, issuing this kind of an appeal, or do you have to really get to be so fundamental that you kick the bishops out, you kick others out, and you start basically all over again?
Well,
that's the question.
And the other question, to my belief, is that I think, as the Pope says in his letter, I think you have to deal with the children and you have to deal with the faithful, with the people in the Church. But they have to work really, really, really hard on the victims, because this report just out of the state of Pennsylvania alone, this is one state, is just
okay.
So is atrocious. So I mean, we have to. It seems to me the first thing is that you have to address the issues and the problems that were inflicted upon those victims.
Well, see, that is true. You do have to work very hard on that. But the other thing you have to work hard on is trying to figure out what it is that will stop this in the future.
Absolutely.
My mother has the answer.
Which is?
93-year-old Italian Catholic says, well, she's doing fine without it. Men need sex. And the whole priesthood celibacy has to be done away with. It is attracting men who are perhaps looking, you know, to put a positive spin on it, looking for control. Like, I won't do this if I'm in a setting, an institution that does not allow it. And, of course, what's happened is this explosion. This has been going on at least, well, I mean, my grandparents told their kids, stay away from the priest, go be the altar boy and then come right home. So everyone knows about it and has looked around it. 1980, my friend Karen Henderson began writing about it at the Cleveland paper, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and she was shut down. The spotlight story that became the big movie, that was 15 years ago. And this is only a grand jury report in one state, part of one state. It's just ridiculous that's going on. I think that the Vatican needs to sell a couple of those Rembrandt France or the Sistine Chapel and pay off people who have suffered and get rid of everybody, all the bishops who allowed it.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about
when
you talk about a pipeline to the priesthood, what about women? I mean, there's a movement through progressive Catholicism to ordain women, and the Protestant side of things has come pretty far on that one, and we're not hearing the same types of stories.
No, you're not. And the story in the Times about what's going on in Pennsylvania, you know, they made the point to say that one of the people whose stories they talk about, the statute of limitations had expired.
Yeah, that's a good
point. You know, and in New York, we have the ability to do something about that with the Child Victims Act. And year after year, the Senate Republicans, who are beholden to the Catholic Church in the state for whatever reason, will not let that pass.
So what is the reason?
When they had a discussion about it this year, they wanted the taxpayers to pay the damages, not the church. Well, I don't know, Alan. You'd have to ask John Flanagan and his members what that reason is, other than that they are Catholic as well, and that, you know, I don't think they're complicit in the abuse at all, but they don't want to do anything that will damage the church, because the church in the history of the Republican Party has been able to deliver votes. They're also anti-choice, you know, anti-reproductive health care. So there's all those kinds of political machinations going on.
So if the Senate goes Republican, flips. Yeah.
That bill will pass.
Did I do something bad?
No.
But okay. The bill will pass.
Sarah was moving away from the microphone. She wanted out of that conversation.
If the Senate goes Democratic, then do you think that the Senate will have the guts to do what's right?
Yes.
I mean, what we've seen in the past, of course, is that as long as the Senate had the Senate to do the dirty work, it was okay. But now the question is, if you give them the power, will the Senate do what is right?
I think that they will do what's right as long as we don't have a resurgence of the IDC, because that's always a possibility too.
Joe, just to get back to the church, which is you heard parishioners over the weekend. And they wanted to get back to the church, and it's so you can hear their frustration, because deep down it's the faith, and they have a faith in their religion, and they want to go to church, and they don't want to give up their religion and their faith, and yet they are so conflicted by the atrocities that was done, and you can hear in them how torn and the struggle they have. And what the church has to do is obviously bring back some level of faith and trust. And the only way, as Alan said, the only way you're going to bring back trust is if you literally, if the Pope, you have to clean house. You have to be able to ensure that there is a trust, and that nobody who was even involved can be complicit and could still be there.
And the fact that many churches, and not all, there were some, but that many churches didn't even address it on Sunday, of talking about it, where you have those faithful in the pews on Sunday who are coming and wrestling with those issues, that you would think you would at least address it.
So can you help us, Joe, as to why you think they didn't address it?
Well, I think they're probably waiting for the Pope's guidance. They're probably waiting for the diocese and the bishops and the cardinals to come out with what the, for want of a better term, the talking points are. I think that, but I don't know. And also, I guess, and Sarah, I will ask you this question. I mean, there's also the legalities of what when you say something, if it's a church that's been affected, of what you then, how that affects the church in the future.
Yeah, well, when the church is hierarchically structured and the instructions are coming through the bishops and then down through to the pulpit, arguably, is anything said from the pulpit an admission of guilt? On the evangelical side of the spectrum, there was a prominent evangelical minister who came out about inappropriate contact with a female minor, and that was controversial in its own right, because he came out and said, "I made a mistake. The biblical thing to do is to address, you know, to make the victim whole," which he couldn't possibly do, and that resonated very well, oddly, with that church community. So it's very, we're in a bizarre institutional moment with faith and religious institutions, because they're being contorted in the same way that we see truth being contorted in our governments and all institutions, and it's a lot to do with power.
Rosemary said something earlier that struck me. It was that you grew up and...
Yeah, we all knew the priest was funny. You just stayed away from him.
Well, that
was on you.
You'd
get beat up if you your parents would hit you if you, you know, violated.
I mean, I remember growing up and I was an altar boy, and that was my order. Like, go in,
right.
Do your thing, and then
and
get
then
the
get
hell out.
Out
of there.
Yep.
Really? Yeah.
So
yeah.
You accepted it because and I think the Boston reporters got to that. That was why their predatory acts were successful and why they were so heinous. They just relied on this trust and this authority they had. The priest, attention from the priest was an honor
to
many
see,
families.
Rosemary, do we see any parallel with Trump and supporters where there is this level of trust and authority and we are going to ignore the other blemishes no matter how bad they are? Because we have just a fundamental trust in this individual,
yeah,
and we're not going to let anything go.
Libby, you should talk about in the break. We were talking about how this story, the church story, ties in with the custom officials.
Right.
We have a group that has a lot of power, and it is not overlooked by anybody else. And there are abuses.
Right. So let me just quickly set up that story, and then we'll talk about this. This was women are accusing U.S. Custom officers of invasive body searches. This is a national security story from the New York Times and tells the story of a woman who was retrieving luggage at New York's JFK International Airport when Customs and Border Protection officers detained her for a random search. This is in 2016, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, and the school counselor from Long Island had just returned from short Jamaica vacation. She's black. She had been stopped before, but this time a supervisor began asking questions that she hadn't heard previously. Don't you think you're spending too much money traveling? She recalls the supervisor asking. What happened next is the subject of a lawsuit pending in U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of New York. Inside a secure room, Levels litigation alleges a female CBP officer searched Levels' belongings, presumably for illegal drugs, and asked if she was using a tampon or sanitary pad. The question upset her, but Levels replied no and complied when told to remove her shoes, lift her arms, spread her legs. As a second female officer observed, hand on her firearm, the lawsuit says the first officer touched Levels from head to toe before ordering her to squat. Levels was clothed, but the lawsuit claims that the officer squeezed her breast, placed her right hand into her pants, and it goes further into the abuse that the woman suffered. And apparently this is one of many other cases that have been alleged against these customs officers.
Well, this is about power and how, you know, we hear stories out of the children that have been detained that they were sexually abused. This is sexual abuse. If a man did this to a woman on the street, he'd be arrested for sexual assault, if not rape.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You know?
And they're doing it at the direction of other
white
men, predominantly.
That's right, right. And then you've got the what's going on in the church. It's all about power. And when I read this, this was rape, as far as I was concerned. And, you know, one woman doing it to the other because she has the power, because the higher authorities are telling her that this is okay to do. This is not okay to do. Do you think you're spending too much money on traveling? Who are you to make that assumption about anybody? You know, there was another woman coming through San Diego from a one-day trip to the Dominican Republic, if I'm getting all the facts right. There was a woman coming from a one-day trip, and, well, how can you just come back and forth in one day? You know, well, her family worked for the airline, so she had the ability to do that. She, too, was sexually abused by these people. Do not think that this is okay. This is sexual abuse by people in power. It's just that simple.
And it's racial profiling as well.
Yes.
And the questions are really a predicate for CBP to be able to say this was an authorized search because we had reasonable suspicion, which they build by asking bizarre questions and basically putting people in a position where they're going to contradict themselves. And then that creates reasonable suspicion where they think, I mean, they're talking about drug trafficking here,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So that's why they're asking, how much money are you you spending? That's why a cavity search, which is what it's called as opposed to rape, is authorized because of a reasonable suspicion that that this person might be an immigrant trafficking drugs. And that's,
you know, I have an artificial knee, titanium knee, and now I'm going to have two of them in a couple of months, you know. And so every time I go through TSA, I have a very intimate moment with the TSA agent. I don't go, you know, behind a screen or anything. I really don't care. I'm white. And yeah, I'm kind of butch, but I'm white. And I don't think that they would ever assume that I was dealing drugs or anything like that. I'm very upfront. This is what it's about. But women of color, I don't care how many titanium body parts they have, they will be targeted for this. I remember we came back from my one trip to Europe, and we were in the line at TSA at JFK, and this guy who was an agent was grilling a family, a man and a husband and a wife who were Latino and coming back into the country, just grilling them at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. And it's racial profiling, it's power. When you put those two things together, there's going to be abuse.
I haven't heard one word from Rosemary, who is famous for her critique of the TSA.
I don't have to speak anymore. What I've been saying for years is now coming out in these kind of reports. There's total abuse. You put a bunch of people who low paid, long hours, horrible job, doesn't do any good, doesn't really protect anybody. So they're self-important. We're talking about how, you know, this is like ICE, too. I mean, they're like, they're heroes now, too. No, they're really not. And I hate all this abuse of power. I don't have to say anything.
But I think it needs to be said again that there are reports now of the children who are being detained of sexual abuse.
Yeah.
At the hands of ICE.
Sarah, you're at the front lines of this. What do you think?
Yeah.
As far as the
surprising no one. I mean, I think I think that was probably the worst part of it all when we heard the ProPublica tape and heard children crying for their parents. Anybody who's close to this issue also knows why more deeply, why they were crying for their parents, not just from the separation, but the way that they were being treated. And this is the issue, Libby, that you said is going to bring the voters to the polls, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really need more than that, though. Congress needs to act to enact comprehensive immigration reform.
And more specifically, I mean, you were saying voters to the polls, but women to the polls.
Women to the polls. And I think suburban Republican women, they had their hearts torn out when these children were ripped from their parents. And look, you've got your 37% of the base who are going to cheer this, women and men alike. They're like, they don't belong here. You know, they don't deserve protection, blah, 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 blah. But then you've got, 63% of people who are not in favor of this, you know, and these women can see their children in this scenario. What would they do? I mean, come on.
Well, but when you say come on, you know, let me just try this one. Emmett Till, of course.
Yeah.
Where were all the women in that area? In fact, what was happening was they were saying they were accepting the narrative, which is we white women have to be protected
from black men. Right, and that was in the early 60s, and consciousness has changed a bit.
It has?
Yes, I think so.
I think
you go down south in some of those communities, no. But in the rest of the United States, I do think that there's been a change of consciousness around that. But, you know,
whole lot of white women voted for Donald Trump.
Yes, I know, Alan. I know they did. Yes. I know they did. There's internalized misogyny. People don't like Hillary. They vote. I mean, there were women with T-shirts that said "Grab me here" with an arrow pointing down.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
And by the way, you don't have to be a woman to find the abuse in that. I agree. Maybe the motherly instincts, but I think there were a lot of men who saw and heard the tapes of these children, and I don't know. To me, it's either man or woman. If you have any morals and common sense, you had to have been horrified that this is not the way people are treated. And everyone in this room would agree that immigration policies needed to be looked at and addressed. And the Obama administration didn't do, certainly enough. And nobody likes to deal with it. It became the new third rail as opposed to Social Security. But this isn't the answer. You know, separating children from their parents or people is not the answer.
Sarah, do you see outrage over this? I can't see people coming to the polls over this. They'll sit at home and they'll talk, listen to radio shows and say, tis, tis, that's terrible. But they're going to think, oh, I don't have to vote. Everybody else is voting. And besides, I got a nice paycheck. And look at my my retirement. Wow.
401k.
My 401k.
I think this year that's going to be the case. I think this year there's a feeling, there's a sense. Mm-hmm. I would agree. It's kind of like we talked about with the Faso Delgado race where, you know, Delgado beat a group of folks, but there was, you know, minor differences. And, you know, my feeling is, be it Delgado or whomever, people are going to vote. And it's not so much voting for Delgado, but they want to vote against Trump.
I'll give Sarah the last word. We have about a minute.
Well, we've had over 300 lawyers from across New York State come out to serve the parents who were separated from kids at the border who were transported to the Albany County Jail. We've had over hundreds of faith leaders, mental health support professionals. I've never seen anything like it. So if we based on that response and the unusual partnership with law enforcement and Sheriff Apple and the Albany County Jail and the COs that we talk to every day, I had a corrections officer come up to me and say, I want to help my neighbor who's undocumented.
Wow.
Who do I refer that person to for services inside the jail? This is a sea change, I think.
Wow. I feel better if you were like from Arizona, but okay. That's good news.
All right. We're out of time. Thanks to everybody for being here. Great panel. That was really good. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll be back right after this short break.